as if you would continue to go out to your garage or the street and just keep finding oil leaked out upon the ground and get down and quick clean it up and say, "Oh, it's okay. It was just a temporary thing," as opposed to saying, "Well, what's going on with my car?" And so when we're looking at these things today, like please don't think that we're trying to simplify this down to just a conversation about money, because that's not the goal here. So we're going to look at a couple of giving trends and budget updates from the previous year. We're going to talk a little bit about kind of some thoughts that will probably come up as we look through those things, and then talk about what should we do. But also, this question, what should we do, is a bit of a misnomer as well. The reality is, this information, when given to the eldership and the board, they felt like we can't solve this. We need to involve the staff, which was a great call. They couldn't. And the staff, when looking at this, felt like, well, we don't have the answers. We don't know how to solve this. We need to include our teams in our local regions. And they too, when they saw that, said, no, the only way that we can deal with this is to lay it out on the table and discuss it as a family, as the whole church, to discuss it as a group of people and figure out where we ought to go from here. So the what should we do is a bit more conceptual about some ways that we should think, not the direct answers of how we solve this. And I hope that in all of our hearts, when we hear bad news, because we are going to be talking about some bad news tonight, we don't just jump to solutions and we just don't jump to simplify and paint over it with other good news that we know. And instead, we allow it to have its full effect and sit with it as a reality, that way we can again work through it as a family and consider what it means for us as a community. Is everybody with me from that short intro? Awesome. Okay. So, 2 Peter 1, 3 through 11 says, His divine power has given us everything required for life and godliness through the knowledge of Him who called us by His own glory and goodness. By these, He has given us very great and precious promises, so that through them you may share in the divine nature, escaping the corruption that is in the world because of evil desire. For this very reason, make every effort to supplement your faith with goodness, goodness with knowledge, knowledge with self-control with endurance, endurance with godliness, godliness with brotherly affection, and brotherly affection with love. Let's look at that first sentence again. His divine power has given us everything required for life and godliness through the knowledge of Him who's called us by His own glory and goodness. And some translations will say a godly life, essentially. The point is that God always provides everything we need. Not some of the things, not 90%, not 170%. He gives us what is required to be able to follow Him. And from any circumstance, good or bad, there is a direct godly path from that exact point. So even if we get ourselves sideways and twisted as a community, even if we've made poor choices, even if you have fallen into some horrific sin, the reality is from that direct moment, at any point, we have the ability to hand our lives over to God and to step forward with His glory. And this is a really incredible thing. And again, it reminds us that when we look at disappointing or upsetting or bad news, the reality is that God has already given us what we need to go forward. But He does give it to us as a community. He doesn't give it to, you know what I mean? Like it's we've been given everything together that we as a group can go forward with Him. So with that, let's actually dive into some of these very, very specific numbers, and then we'll spend a lot more time thinking about, okay, well, what does this mean? So when we look at weekly contribution for the overall year of 2024, what we see is that of the 1,905 families in the church, And you know, this could be an individual that's living on their own. This could be a husband and wife, they're married. If you have like a teen disciple in the home, like that would also count as like one family. And of that group of families, 1,267 of them gave, two-thirds, right, to regular weekly contribution. And you can kind of see here from the various numbers that different regions are in different places with this. But for Westchester, this is an incredibly encouraging thing. For the year of 2024, it was good news if you only consider it in relation to the other regions. At the end of the day, there was still a significant portions of families within Westchester in 2024 that didn't participate at all within contribution. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that, but here's just kind of like a high-level view of what it looks like for the groups. Then what we do is we measure this in what we call like an all-church giving curve. And I want to be clear, right? Like obviously with all of this, it's based on like individuals, but from the church's perspective, all of this is like anonymized. It's not like individuals' names that anyone is looking at because, you know, the ministry staff doesn't even have access to that. It's just not something that we care about because we care about the community. We care about how we're doing this together. And this is never like a, oh, here's the list of non-givers or something like that. Some churches do that. There's a point in time in the history of this church where probably things like that could have happened, and maybe not here, but definitely in other places within our churches. And so it's just important to note that. The way that this curve works is that it's a way to consider kind of like how many members, what percentage of the membership does it take to give what proportion of the contribution. And so for the overall church in 2024, 10% gave 47%. Now that is relatively normal for many groups. The idea is, right, we don't all make the same income, and so because of it, the level of giving is different for people. But that doesn't make one person more spiritual than somebody else. It's very clear from the scriptures that God is looking at the heart, and he's looking at the intent, and he's looking at the willingness to sacrifice, not just the end number. So don't think that like, oh, okay, well that's what separates us. But it is important to note that of all the ministry work that's being done within the New York City Church of Christ, half of it is being paid for by 10% of the membership. Then 50% of the membership gave 97% of the church's income. And again, right, that's not to discount that last 3%, perhaps some of the most spiritual examples of giving in the church exist in that last part of the curve. But again, it is important for us to note what's really going on with us as a community because half of us are funding most of the work. Then when it comes to all of it together, 70% gave 100%. And keep in mind, this is everything. This is money that went towards missions. This is money that went towards hope and benevolence. This is money that went towards regular operations. This is all things included. If you gave a dollar to any of those in the course of the year, you would be included in that 70%. And what that means is 30% gave nothing. Now, what is horrific upon looking at this is just the reality that year after year we see that those that stop attending, and you know, there's a difference between someone that we would consider like a move out that tells us, oh, I'm going to go be part of this congregation over here, versus those that say, I'm no longer going to the church without a, and here's where I'm going instead. Almost always, the majority of those stop attendings happen in the last part of this curve. And so we see frequently the reality that people often first stop giving, and then after some time, they stop going. And so any year when we look at this chart, it's scary because it means that there's perhaps others that are on the line that have already decided with their wallets whether or not they want to be included within the community. And it's only a matter of time before their feet follow the same path. This matters. Those little gold diamonds are people. They're our friends. They're our spiritual family. And so we have to pay attention to this. When we look at this kind of from a year-over-year comparison, and if you remember, we gave a similar talk about this about 2 years ago, you might think, oh, well, okay, if the people that are leaving were the ones that weren't giving, perhaps these percentages are getting better year over year. But that's actually not the case. What we're seeing is that over time, the percentages are also getting worse. So there's been more disengagement of the remaining set of people, as opposed to it being that just, oh, some people have left, and so because of it, giving engagement has gone up. Now, this next slide is probably the starkest. When we look at 2025 thus far for Westchester, so far 40% of the group hasn't participated in any type of giving. So nothing preemptively towards special, nothing for the poor, nothing for general contribution. And so what happens is over time, this pattern of reduced engagement on a slimming set of people, the overall financial results of the church continue to be worse off. And so even though kind of the expenses level has been brought down each of those last couple of years, so too has income also vastly dropped. And so when we look at the results of 2024, the church as a whole lost about 970,000. That got paid out of the reserves, which I'll talk about in a moment. It's a big deal. When you look at that, those numbers, like that's intense. And now, when we look at, this what was the actual budget, it was 6.5 million for 2024. And now in 2025, the overall budget is 6 million, right? The church has been trying to take every step possible in terms of not immediately replacing roles that have transitioned out and different things with the hope of, well, we have to bring this back in line. But if the giving keeps dropping the way that it has, that's not like it's not going to catch up quick enough. Now, you also might notice, well, 6.5 million in budget versus an actual 7 million in expenses. The vast majority of that is for special events and camps throughout the course of the year, which aren't budgeted in the same way. And so the expenses is typically about somewhere between 300 to 600,000 more per year. But that also reflects in income. So again, the church is taking these steps, but ultimately, even for the year ahead, if you look back at 2024, just the level of giving was far below what it would have taken for a balanced budget. And this year, even with lower expenses, we're seeing the same type of reality play out before us. This is kind of a slide to show where the money goes. This information is available on the website. I'm not sure if this year's budget is there yet, but I'll ask the team to take a look at it. Then also for the what this means then for like operating capital, for us as a group, as a nonprofit, it just makes sense. You try to keep between 3 to 6 months of money in the bank. And a couple years ago when we showed this, we had expressed that like, hey, if we don't make significant changes now, this is back in 2022, and we find a way to heal this disengagement, well, in a couple of years' time, roughly in the middle of 2024, we're going to be at a place that we pass through this line of safety of keeping at least 3 months in the bank. And that happened. It played out almost exactly to the month of when we had expected that it would. And now we kind of continue on this downward path. But again, without significant changes, we're in real trouble. All of this too is then separately exacerbated, but just another stark reality that we have to pay attention to because it's so interconnected, is the overall age and gender breakdown of the church. Here's what it was in 2021. And just the way that this chart works, it's men here and women here, and you can kind of see how the church was subdivided into different age brackets at that point in time. Now you'll notice, right? If you trace this back in your mind, historically for the church, you have kind of this massive boom over those years where the church was really growing. And then things started to level off in the late 90s, right? And then right around the early 2000s, with the letter exposing so many things, with the church trying to like reconcile what was going on, the campus ministry in the church collapsed. And now those people that you zoom like 20 years later, they're just missing from the church collectively. Like it's just another like massive gap down from the previous age bracket that we lost a lot of people. And that was never recovered. So like when I was growing up as a disciple, I'd look around and be like, well, where's the men that are like 5 to 7 years older than me that I can learn from? There weren't many. Now, if we look at what's transpired since, this was the end of 2021, and compare that to the end of 2024. Yes, the church aged by 3 years, right? That would be an expected thing. But then a lot of our younger sets, and when I say younger, I mean I'm being generous with the term. When we're looking at this, every age bracket less than 60 years shrunk in those 3 years. Every single one. And so not only did the church age, but also we lost a lot of people. Some people moved out of the city because it was too expensive, and some people gave up on the whole enterprise. And so while the church was trying to invest more in campus ministry and stuff, it's just the reality was it wasn't just about that we were having trouble. It was across the board. And so this is hard stuff to look at. Nehemiah 1, 3 through 4 says, they said to me, the remnant in the prov they said to me, the remnant in the province who survived the exile are in great trouble and disgrace. Jerusalem's wall has been broken down and its gates have been burned. When I heard these words, I sat down and wept. I mourned for a number of days, fasting and praying before the God of the heavens. Our appropriate response to news like this is weeping. It's mourning. It's begging God for direction and hope. And this is why, kind of, the point, like, we can't just jump to solutions. We want to look at this as a family and kind of own the reality of what some of those numbers mean. Because again, we know that those numbers are attached to deeper things. It's not just the numbers. When I heard these words, I sat down and wept. I mourned for a number of days, fasting and praying before the God of the heavens. You know, when I look at a chart like this, all these, not so much, but this one, it absolutely breaks my heart. Because it means that we as a family are not totally united. It means that we don't all agree on what priorities should be. It means that there's all sorts of like reasons why someone might not give, but certainly this means that some are strong in people's minds and hearts. And it's not something that's just like, oh, well, we should disregard this as those people are faithless. That's not true. But something is going on here. that we have to reckon with as a whole community, that we can't just like move on or preach a sermon about just giving more. We have to really sit down with it and think about what this means and open up conversations with one another. Now, again, there might have been a couple things that came to mind while you were looking at this presentation, and I want to just talk about some of them directly. You might be thinking, well, like, hey, I've heard a lot of people have left staff. Like, we know that Sam and Cynthia retired. What about Steve Kinnard? What about the Novaks? What about Bobby? Like myself, right? I'm not on staff either anymore. A lot of those things, in some cases, like, we had already hired the replacements. As you guys know, Sam and Cynthia were not just leading the church, they were also leading Westchester. It's a significant thing to have those ty two types of massive responsibilities. And so Kinson and Shayla were hired with the expectation that they would absolutely be the couple that could stand in and become the leaders of Westchester, which I believe they're doing an incredible job at, and I'm sure you guys agree. But that was already planned. Like, it's not like then there was suddenly more money to hire another couple. It was already there. And then two, again, when we're looking at this, it's not like then suddenly there was, if those couples went away, well, then suddenly we're at level. We were below the line, and even then, without the couples, because giving has also been reducing, there's nowhere else to like pull the money from. You may be wondering about, well, hey, what happened? Why is it that 2 years ago we talked about this, and then we still spent the more money than we were taking in? A big portion of that is whenever a nonprofit has significant reserves. In this case, we had about 6 months in the bank. It's incorrect, when times are tough for an organization, to just chop off ministry activities. To do so, right, would reduce the chances that the church is going to grow out of the trouble that it faces. And so instead, what you would be doing is you would be chopping up the organization's mission, in this case for us, the commission to go and make disciples and teach them to obey everything and to mature. Like, we would be getting rid of that goal and saying, let's just protect the money in the bank. You can't do that. If you have the money, you have to keep spending it towards reaching the mission and trying to figure out. And so while the church has been doing its best to cut back on expenses, the options of where to cut are now very, very limited. The only options really would be, okay, well, it would be just less staff. That would be people's jobs and their ministry careers. That would be less people on staff and less regions without leaders and less regions without campus leaders and all of those pieces. And then finally, you may have heard, like, well, wasn't the church going to get some ERC money? That is true. We were expected to and filed for that a long time ago, and finally have started to receive some of it. But in total, the ERC credits that we're going to receive represents about $600,000. And what those are is essentially like refund to taxes that were paid during COVID for payroll costs. That $600,000 essentially like bumps us up one more month on that chart. The downward angle of the trajectory doesn't change with that. So it buys us a little bit more time than what I showed you on that, now that that has now, again, those have started been received in this past month, but it doesn't change the overall picture. So that leaves us with this question: well, what should we do? So I want to read a scripture that's just been helpful for me in the midst of this time period. 1 Timothy 5, 1 through 2 says, "Don't rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father, younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, and the younger women as sisters with all purity." And I hope with the next couple of things that I say, you hear me clearly and don't think that I'm trying to like command or direct, but instead that I'm trying to exhort. And exhort is a really cool word. The Greek is parakaleo, which essentially means this idea of you can think parallel, right, with or along, and then kaleo, literally like telephone call. It's this idea to call alongside. When I look at these numbers and I mourn, I'm asking you to sit alongside me and mourn as well. When I talk about us as a congregation and how some of this historical piece plays into it and what we should do, it's not a instruction to you. It is a desperate request that you would come and look at it while I'm looking at it. Does that make sense? Okay. So again, when we look at this, there's some truth of our history that just has to be addressed with how we got here. If we look 20 plus years in the past, we existed in a world of perhaps, I think this is the right way to phrase it, high integrity, but low grace. There was an expectation that the biblical standard of living was followed. However, by proclaiming that biblical standard, but then lambasting those that perhaps were not at it at certain point in times, we ended up with a militaristic, top-down leadership style that did a lot of hurt to many of us. The idea that in certain cases, contributions were compelled. People would come, house, right? Like, and again, this didn't happen everywhere, but these are real stories that occurred. And maybe things like this happened that were similar to you, of just like this expectation about, like, hey, you didn't give, where is it? Let's go. And those types of situations, that system as a whole, even though the church desperately moved to throw off those activities in the early 2000s. And so someone like me, who was baptized shortly after that, came into a group where I didn't feel that directly. We can't just erase that history. The reason that dysfunction exists and continues to exist in groups is not just that a traumatic event has occurred. It's that traumatic events occur and no one is able to talk about it. It becomes something that we just don't really discuss how that might play into any present situations. And that breeds continuing dysfunction where new people get hurt in new ways. And so, even though the reality is now with our congregation that as it has aged, and as we have gone further and further from this, there's a couple different like personality points that often stick out. One, there are people that can feel like, well, God, when are we going to be awesome again? Like I keep following the steps. How come it's not having the impact that I want it to have? There's people that are still hurt, that there is still a mistrust and misbelief for leadership, for what the church is doing with money, for all of these things, like that can still exist in people's hearts. And then I think what happens with many well-meaning disciples that are in this slightly aged crowd, they themselves, you yourselves, heroes in the faith that survived all of this turmoil and held on, have deep welled convictions. You love God wholeheartedly. You're gonna keep giving. You're gonna keep praying. You're gonna keep serving. You're gonna keep offering what you have to help others along. But because of this horrific past, because of these questionable, troublesome, sometimes sinful methods that occurred, you are very careful to not lay burdens on others. Does that make sense? This concept of like, I have these convictions, I know that others should have it, but I don't want to follow those paths of the past. And so what ends up happening is for new people growing up in the church who desperately need your convictions, who want to learn and want to be transformed and want to understand how to live in this life, you have these hard-fought lessons that God forged in difficult times, but it can be hard to teach others them because, again, you don't want to be anything that looked like the past. And so people like me that again have grown up in this after environment that respect you so much, that want to learn from you so much, have sometimes grown up without getting taught some of these very same convictions about giving, about sacrifice, about truly laying down your life for others. And so I need that from you. And if you're in, maybe one of the other groups and you there is still hurt, like, I'm just so sorry because that was wrong. You were mistreated. And if it's still there, I just hope and I pray that you can keep opening that up to others and keep letting that wound be shown so that it can be healed. Because there's a long history in the church, in the New Testament, of people being hurt. But we don't want that to be our identity. Our identity is Christ. The idea of what the church ought to be is not just a flawed, dysfunctional institution. The idea of what the church should be is the body of Christ itself. It is the bride of Christ. It is described as a pillar of truth. It is described as God's family and a royal priesthood and all of these different things. And so we can look at the past and we can use that to disregard the present. Or we can see it for what it should be, which is we are a flawed group that is being perpetually transformed and perfected to become the bride of Christ. I love you guys so much. And again, when we look at these different things, we just recognize that there's a deeper reality to all of it. And again, there's plenty of reasonable reasons to not give to the church. One, you might be supporting family somewhere else. That's not just a reasonable reason, it's a biblical imperative. If we were to not care for family members and let them exist in poverty because we were giving to the church, we would be worse than heathens. Like it doesn't make any sense. But at the same time, that's not all of us. And the reality is that the audience that that's written to was much closer to abject poverty than we could possibly comprehend. And so we need to be real careful about kind of how we even balance out that one, except for the fact that, again, you have to do it. If your family is in need, you need to support them. And disregarding that to give to the church would be wrong. Then there's the reality of job loss. And we look through this last half decade, it's been a tough one. It's been a tough one. And I know that we saw it within the church paying out benevolence. Like for a while, many of us were in significant need. And thank God that the disciples had been so generous so long for so long. That it was so easy to pay out so much in food cards, rent support, all of this stuff to those that had lost something significant during the pandemic. But again, we also know that's not the majority of us. Then it can be reasonable to not give because of fear. You look at updated interactions with other countries. And you say, oh my goodness, what is going on? And in moments of fear and uncertainty, it is a natural human reaction to attempt to grab what is around you and hold it close and hold it safe. That's normal. You're not weird for feeling that pressure. You're not unspiritual for feeling that. But we also know that perfect love drives out fear. And if we're really being honest with ourselves and if we're being honest with the scriptures, it does not matter what happens in this world around us. We have the opportunity to follow God. We have the opportunity to have all of our needs provided for. And we will not be able to save ourselves by just squirreling it away. The only way to save ourselves is to offer ourselves over to God. Okay, the next, it can be reasonable to not give because of mistrust. And if you have mistrust toward the church now or the church in the past, that is something that again strikes the chord of reasonable. But that's where we have to be willing to talk to each other because all of us left to our own devices in our heads, left to only our reading of the scripture, can go off on odd paths that is only healed when we work through things together as a community. God has given us one another so that we have a better chance of understanding his word and his truth. And Christianity was built to be something that we help normalize one another towards God's will. And so we want to, like, in the same idea of like just weird things that we don't talk about, like, once money gets into that set, it's not going to come out. You're not going to go for many years without discussing your budget with anybody else and then suddenly one day pop it back out. But it's okay to discuss those things. In fact, it is healthy to discuss those things. Jesus made no holds on discussing financial matters. And that shouldn't be a weird thing that we just keep to ourselves. It can be something that we discuss with each other and help each other with. And we need that. We need to help each other. We need one another's reproach. We need one another's encouragement. And so, yeah, again, there's plenty of reasonable reasons to not give. But the question is, are we going to do God's will? Are we going to do what he asks us? Jesus makes it clear that the difference between zero and two coins is infinitely large. The idea of just being willing to participate a little is massive in what it means for our hearts, what it means in our spiritual coherence, what it means in our understanding of where we're going to place our money. So that's where our heart will be. It really, truly matters. We didn't look at the story today, but Genesis 28 talks about essentially what is one of, it's the second example of like tithing in the Bible. It's not Moses giving to Melchizedek. It's not Abraham giving to Melchizedek. It's instead Jacob seeing the vision of angels coming up and down from heaven and God telling him the blessings that he has in store for him. And not just for him, but for his whole family that will then bless the entire world. And Jacob's response is one of outrageous gratitude. A response of, well, God, if you're going to do that, I'm just going to give back 10% of everything. As a community and a group, I just beg you to reconsider this grace of giving. It really matters. We can often think that this idea of giving is just this like personal decision between us and God. And that it doesn't impact anybody else. But it does. It does impact others. The reality is, there's some disciples within this congregation that have been bearing the burden of the rentals and the staff and the insurance that the church needs to run and all of those different things. They've just been bearing it year after year. And when some have let go for many different reasons, it doesn't take away the burden as if it didn't exist. It just transfers the weight of that burden to others. And we see that play out in special. We see that in situations where it's like, hey, we're not hitting the goal. And some disciples just give more. They reach into their pockets a second time and give more to contribution because they want missions to be supported, because they want God's word to go out to the world, because they want other people to be offered the same grace that they themselves have received. When we all collectively as a group respond to this and participate, right? Not that we each give all the money, whatever, but when everybody participates, the actual burden of this weight is not too much to bear. Much of the church's financial problems would be solved with just like maybe another 5 to 7% of the church giving out of the total. It's nothing crazy. It's not unobtainable. And that's why, like for me, that piece doesn't worry me at all. I don't really care about that. The budgeting stuff will get figured out. But I do care about our hearts. I care about us as a community. I care about the type of community that I'm raising my son into. And it breaks my heart. I want us to all be able to experience the full life that Jesus promised. And that full life, that peace that surpasses all understanding, requires faithful sacrifice in all areas. It really does. So, just a couple of last ideas here. What should we do as a community? Well, we absolutely need to practice pragmatic frugality. We want to pay attention to the things that we as a church are spending money on. And that's where, again, expenses, the church has been doing everything that they can to keep cutting, to keep cutting, to really just make core ministry run, because that's what matters. And then, two, we want to be sure that we continue to think of ourselves as a collective group. And what I mean by that is we sometimes, as a group, put on very expensive events. And we fool ourselves as the church by saying, well, you know what I mean? Like it paid for itself. So therefore it wasn't an expense to the organization of the church. But it was, we are the church, the whole set of us. And so if we had this really expensive event that everyone put 400 odd dollars into, it matters. That collectively impacts what we as a community have available to make sure that God's work is done. And so sometimes we really need to carefully consider those events and say, okay, well, we love getting together as disciples, but how can we do it inexpensively? How can we do it in a way that honors what matters, us coming together and us encouraging each other, and not do it in a way that we are spending resources that no one really has, so to speak? My one exception to that is I truly believe that camps should happen and run, even though they're always going to be expensive. There's no way to really get around the camps costing a lot, and it matters so much for the kids. Like it wouldn't make sense to just stop doing that, even though it's a tough cost on the church. And then finally, we want to keep communicating truth and restoring conversations. Let nothing be a weird thing that you don't discuss with anybody else. If you don't give, be willing to talk about why, because the reasons matter. And sometimes they're very spiritual, and sometimes they're made with the right heart, and sometimes they're not. And we just need to be willing to open the door to all areas of our life so that we can keep working through it together as a group. And then let us keep focusing on what matters and pouring our attention into caring for what are the most critical things for God's work to be done. I'm going to end with this final scripture. Isaiah 43:19. God says, "Look, I am about to do something new. Even now it is coming. Do you not see it? Indeed, I will make a way in the wilderness, rivers in the desert." When we zoom out, we know God wins. And no failures of an organization, no past sin, no weird, none of that stops God's will. God is going to win. And even if he doesn't use us to have his will be done, he would very much have rocks speak up as necessary. And so when I think about a God that's going to, no matter what, absolutely let his word be given to the whole earth, I want to be part of that. I want to participate in that, and I don't want it to be some rock speaking instead of me. So thank you guys all for your time tonight. Thank you for allowing me to speak, and just thank you for your attention.
All right. So again, Bobby, thank you so much. Man, your heart, the honesty, the transparency, is an example for us to follow. And so, I just want to